A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations and institutions. Today, we'll check in with the American Repertory Ballet, whose newly appointed executive director, Julie Diana Hench, stepped into her role this fall. She joins Princeton Ballet School director Pamela Levy, who joined the company last fall, and Douglas Martin, who has served as artistic director since 2010, and I'll speak with them about the road forward for the ballet. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. As recovery efforts continue in areas hit hard by this year's hurricanes, fundraising and other contributions are helping make a difference in the music world. A partnership between the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts, and Tala Puerto Ricano announced that they had raised more than $34,000 through donations at recent concert performances of West Side Story. The proceeds will be used to support recovery efforts in Puerto Rico following Hurricane Maria. Additional donations will be collected at the Kimmel Center's next Latin music series, La Noche, on November 20th. Members from several dance companies will be represented in a benefit in New York entitled Hearts for Houston, October 22nd. According to Dance Magazine, Houston Ballet principal dancers Yuriko Kajia and Jared Matthews helped organize the event at the Ailey City Group Theater to raise funds to support United Way of Greater Houston. The performance will include dancers from New York City Ballet, American Ballet Theater, Pennsylvania Ballet, Washington Ballet, Texas Ballet Theater, the Houston Ballet, and Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Newark made steps to reclaim its rightful place in the music world this week as the Recording Academy opened its first East Coast Grammy Museum experience in the Prudential Center. The museum includes a mix of Grammy memorabilia and an exhibit highlighting some of Newark's musical royalty, including Frank Sinatra, Whitney Houston, Sarah Vaughan, and Frankie Valli. During the ribbon-cutting ceremony, Houston's mother, Sissy Houston, performed with the New Hope Baptist Church Choir, where Whitney Houston got her early singing start. Some of the items on display include a tuxedo worn by Luciano Pavarotti and Henry Mancini's 20 Grammy statuettes. At the interactive displays, visitors can test and improve their drumming skills with a lesson through an interactive video from East Street Band drummer Max Weinberg, or sing backup for Ray Charles's Hit the Road Jack. We'll have more coverage on the opening on an upcoming A Tempo. Those are just some of the headlines from around the arts world. The new season at American Repertory Ballet in Princeton kicked off last month with a celebration of its resident choreographer, Mary Barton, followed in October by the company premiere of Kirk Peterson's Carmen, based on the opera by Georges Bizet. Offstage, the company was marking another new beginning, welcoming Julie Diana Hench as its new executive director. Most recently executive director of the Juneau Dance Theater, Hench studied at the School of American Ballet in New York and danced as a principal with San Francisco Ballet and Pennsylvania Ballet. At ARB, she succeeded Vanessa Logan, who left in July 2016 to join Texas Ballet Theater. Hench joins Pamela Levy, who was named director of the Princeton Ballet School last fall, and Douglas Martin, who has been artistic director since 2010, in forging the company's direction, which in recent years has led it to new performance venues and the introduction of sensory-friendly performances. Both Hench and Levy have New Jersey roots. Hench was born in the state, and Levy started her own dance studies at the school she now leads. I sat down with them recently to talk about their plans for the season and beyond, and what brought them back to the area. Hench said she was drawn in partly by the company's reputation and also the chance to be back in the state.
This was a pretty wonderful homecoming for me after zigzagging the country quite a bit, to be able to come into the organization at this time. I think there's a great team in place. There are a lot of exciting things on the horizon for the organization, and I'm grateful to be a part of it and to start shaping the future.
What are some of your priorities coming in?
Right. Well, I think really building on the community relationships that have already been established, mm-hmm. incorporating new artists, more new choreographers, really working on broadening our outreach efforts, and looking ahead to the New Brunswick Performing Arts Center as well, and our establishment in that cultural space, really kind of nurturing those relationships as well with what are going to be our neighbors in the Arts Center, and broadening our student base and really making a bigger presence.
As far as the presentation side, the performance side, with the introduction of some newer venues, what are you seeing as far as the reach of American Repertory Ballet?
I think we're looking to broaden it. this year already, we have, we've been to New York before, but we have two engagements in New York. We're going to be in Annenberg at the University of Pennsylvania in March. And I think continuing to reach throughout New Jersey, but also more throughout the region, and even looking further than that nationally, and looking to see where we can bring the company and showcase their talents.
And you mentioned the community outreach portions of that. I noticed mm-hmm. that you had been involved, or you participated in the Any Given Child initiative when you were in Juneau. What are some of the types of community engagement programs and community outreach programs that, first of all, you think ARB has done very well, and then how they can be expanded?
We can talk to Pam in a second as well, but sure. I think, clearly Dance Power is, in its 32nd year, and last year it was $110,000 in scholarships awarded to these scholars. We've expanded into Piscataway, really trying to broaden that program as well. I mean, it's been tremendously successful, has impacted so many lives in such a positive way, and really trying to broaden that reach as well. But in-school residencies, community outreach performances, in New Brunswick, in Princeton, throughout New Jersey, really trying to really show all that our organization has to offer and bring it into the community, and especially into underserved populations, but also to, people who just don't know, about us and who might be interested in what we have to offer. So.
Well, that's actually a good segue to the to the school. And, Pam, you've been here now a year. What had attracted you to the school here and to the program?
Well, I grew up at the Princeton Ballet School. My early training was here until I went off to college at Rutgers at Mason Grove School of the Arts. And I had moved back into the area several years ago, and I was here teaching a little bit and working with Mary Pat Robertson and the rest of the faculty. And I just really felt like, having grown up here and been here when Audrey and Beth Esty, the founders of the school, were still teaching, I felt like I understood the foundational philosophies of the school, and yet I'd also been able to see how much the organization had grown while still maintaining that philosophy and that foundation when Mary Pat Robertson was director for 30 years of the school. And I really felt like, seeing that growth and also understanding that foundation, I could come back to the school and participate in that way, where I could help continue that growth and yet at the same time maintain the foundational philosophies of the training, and I understand sort of where the school was coming from and where it was going. And I felt like my experiences as a teacher and directing other programs really could, and my sort of broad view of the dance world in terms of ballet and modern even, I could come back and really contribute something to that.
Where do you see the school, how does the school program complement overall American Repertory Ballet and build on its possibilities?
For one thing, we're training dancers, and our school really has two different tracks and many different sort of entry points into dance. So we say that at our school, there's a place for everyone at the Princeton Ballet School. If you are trying to become a professional dancer, a professional ballet dancer or even modern or theatrical dancer, our training is for you. If you want to have excellent dance training, but not on the level of becoming a professional dancer, just as something that really is a fulfilling element of your life, then we have that here as well. And in terms of the company, I think there are two elements. One is obviously training dancers if they want to dance with our company to be at that caliber of dancing. But on the other side of it, it really comes back down to that community enrichment. Studying dance is enriching. Seeing live performance of dance is enriching. And we have a series called On Point, a lecture series, where that kind of bring the two together. A lot of those On Point lectures are about what's going on with the company and bringing the community into that to understanding sort of the behind the scenes. And then a lot of our On Point lectures, so many of our young students come to those and they get to observe that part of the process, which I think really piques their interest mm-hmm. in the company. I think that studying dance and watching live dance performance really go hand in hand, because as a student of dance, you're learning the process, and then as an audience member, you're seeing the results of that process and the beauty and enrichment of observing a live dance performance, especially when you study dance, is it's even deeper.
Right, and the students are able to see the possibilities of what yeah. they can achieve, right? So they're inspired, and it's motivating, and they realize, this is why I go back to the bar and do a plié yeah. every morning, yeah. is to be able to, you know, eventually do something like what these professionals might be doing.
So. Well, I know in the classical music world, there's you often hear a lot of hand-wringing or concerns about the next generation and where are the musicians going to be coming from, particularly because at least traditionally school programs have been such a major feeder into developing new musicians. Are you seeing similar challenges with ballet? Is ballet a perennial draw that young people get excited and
I think that the ballet training at our school, like I said, is on many different levels and addressing many different needs of many different people. And when you're talking about the professional ballet world, I believe actually that I don't think we're really wringing our hands or worried. I see a lot of really talented and motivated young dancers. In our particular community, those dancers are oftentimes facing decisions that they have to make at the end of their high school career, whether they want to go to college and either pursue dance or pursue something else, or go directly into the dance world. And I try to really open up the doors for families to understand that there are many different paths that you can take, and that if a dancer is particularly talented and driven and motivated, that there is the chance to go to college later on and get your degree later on and study dance now, or you can go through a college program and then dance, or just have dance be a really important part of your life. But there actually has been, in, I'd say, the past 10 years, kind of an explosion of dance schools around the country. The dance schools are opening up, and they're, we used to be the only dance school in the area, and I think it's a really positive thing for dance that so many people want to dance now. And there has also been a big push for diversity in dance and really opening up the world of ballet to showing that anyone can have access to that, and anyone who wants to dance should be dancing. And so I actually feel very positive about that. And I see that determination in our young dancers who want to be professional dancers, and it's such a joy to be able to be there to coax them along and help them and support them in their efforts. But it's actually very encouraging and exciting and wonderful to see how committed many of these young dancers are.
How much has the school, looking back with your earlier experience, how much has the school grown?
So I don't know what the numbers were for the school when I was there, because I was a teenager just dancing and doing my own thing. But I can tell you that at that time, we had two studios down on Alexander Road, And I think we had the Cranberry Studio, which was one room, and then the New Brunswick Studio was two rooms. And now we have four rooms here, two rooms in New Brunswick, two rooms in Cranberry, bustling, I mean, from end-to-end classes constantly. So I don't know what the numbers were then, but our average number of total students now is about 1,000 amongst all of our studios and programs, our open enrollment, our young children's programs, our dance power programs, our pre-professional programs. It's pretty high. There's a lot that's going on. It's really like a microcosm of a little city of dance happenings.
And I think what you were just saying, Pam, about the diversity of our programs that we offer, really, it provides accessibility to students who are choosing different tracks. Mm-hmm. You know, so it allows for anyone who might want to study to find some class or some schedule here that would fit their needs and their desires.
Artistic director Douglas Martin was also part of our conversation, and he talked about some of the challenges in drawing in new audiences, especially with so many entertainment options available today.
Theater going is a learned behavior. You could go 6 months, 8 months, forgetting how much you love to just go to the theater. You know, give me some cheap tickets or whatever. When I was a dancer in New York, you know, you get so tired of your daily grind that you're forgetting to go see the ballet. I had friends, actually from New York City Ballet, that knew nothing about any other company because they had this 7-day-a-week schedule. You never knew when their day off was going to be. It was all about rehearsals. It went 12 hours a day, you know. It was this really hard schedule. And so a lot of them didn't see a lot about their dance. And whenever I'd get to that point, I'd remind myself to get out and just go no matter how tired I was. And you have to kind of culture that behavior. And it's great to start with young children, teaching them that, you know, that energy that you get from a live performance, the chance, right? When you see anyone doing anything on television or recorded dance or events, so many times it's staged to the point that you're not sure if they did those pirouettes the first time they tried to do it. You go to a live performance and that high note, that lift, that jump, that slide across the stage, that is all chance. And to get to see it live and happen is thrilling, you know? That's why the audience cheers when they see those things. People are out there risking everything. And so to get to be part of that and remind yourself that you're partaking in that live experience is so, so important. But you do have to remind yourself and teach other people to do that. That's part of our job, both in marketing, but getting young people into theaters and getting the schools to understand that it's important as not just a part of the education, but community building. Mm-hmm. You're teaching them to be citizens, and part of being a citizen is having a strong town presence, right? Not just saying, oh, I don't bother to vote, I don't bother to do this, I don't go to the theater, I don't partake in anything in my town. Then you have a really weak town, don't you? So get out and be part of the community and be part of people's lives. But then the payoff is getting to see that live risk happen and the excitement from it.
Live performance is so vibrant, as Douglas was talking before about how there's so much on-demand entertainment in your own living room available now. And families are under so much pressure, and everybody's working really hard. School is really hard. It is hard sometimes to get out of your house at the end of the day and go see a live performance. But once you're in that theater and you experience the vibrancy of that moment and sort of the, I guess, the real truth of that moment, there's a certain truth and authenticity. There's authenticity in that moment of that performance. And like Douglas was saying, that sense of community with the people you're sharing that performance with. So it's not just your immediate family watching something on YouTube or Netflix or anything like that, but with many other people, some whom you know, many whom you don't, and you're all cheering together, or you're all gasping at a moment together, or crying together, whatever is happening in that moment, and then interacting in the lobby before and after the show and during intermission. It feels to me oftentimes like a celebration, a big group communal celebration. And there are so many elements of that one evening of live theater experience that is so special. So the challenge is getting people to go to the theater on a rainy night, or you know, or when they're particularly tired and don't want to get in the car and drive someplace and organize their schedules around that. But once they're there, it's such a wonderful experience that our hope is that they'll continue to come back and bring their friends. But then also exposing that experience to people who might not even realize that's something they'd enjoy. So getting them in there in the first place is a big challenge that I think we're all working on from the school end, from the marketing end, from the directoral end, to open up that access to people who might think, the theater isn't for me, I don't belong in the theater, that's not a place for me, and help them understand that, yes, it is a place for you, especially for you. So I think through our school time matinees and through our sensory-friendly performances and through all of our outreach, our Dance Power program, drawing people into the world of ballet, saying, this is for you. If you're a human being, then this is for you. Any age, this is for you. And getting that message out there is definitely a challenge, but it's one that we're a challenge we're up to and we're constantly facing and trying to find new ways to work around.
Right, and I think the idea of bringing children to the theater in particular, where they're so young and impressionable, and having them experience these wonderful, you know, communal artistic collaborations really inspires not only them educationally and artistically and personally, but also to cultivate the next generation of arts lovers. And, you know, whether or not they choose to pursue a career in dance or music, but, you know, perhaps they'll be future audience members, or maybe they'd want to work backstage, or maybe they'd want to be part of the arts community in some way in the future. And I think that's really important to bring those young faces to the theater, and we love seeing them there as well. The spontaneity of their reaction during the performances, I think, is so it's wonderful. And I know that, you know, the artists on stage, you know, when they hear spontaneous applause or gasps, or, you know, even from the little ones, I mean, it's just, it's invigorating. And I think it really speaks to what art can do for individuals, for the community, and for our culture at large.
Well, one element of that is live music, and that's something that's being incorporated increasingly in your performances. Where are you now in terms of the current season, and where do you see that going?
We just had the collaboration with Rutgers Symphony Orchestra, and we're looking ahead to the rest of the season to see where we can incorporate more live music, and looking ahead to future programming. Next year, collaborating with Princeton Symphony Orchestra.
And Rutgers as well.
And Rutgers as well, absolutely. And as we're looking at our programming, speaking with these other organizations to see where they might be interested in working with us.
And we threw out those two orchestra names,
right?
But the hope would be that sometimes we can use the orchestra, sometimes we can use individuals of the orchestra. And voice, we have Westminster Choir College close by, as well as Rider University, with great voice programs. And we have used them in the past for performances, and so we're hoping to do that in the future as well.
And children's choirs, right? Yeah. For Nutcracker.
Yeah, we use Trenton Boys Choir, we use the Princeton Girls Choir every year. I think the arts impact people's lives in two important ways. For children, they teach freedom of expression, and it's an education, and exposure, of course, to joy and sadness and all the things that the arts bring. For adults, it reminds us of community and reminds us of the value of interaction, and that's live performance. And also, you know, teaches culture, teaches us to express who we are, reminds us of the importance of that freedom of expression. And it broadens our opinion of what the world is and surprises us because of that. And so it's so important to have that expression in our lives on a yearly basis, on a bi-yearly basis. It should be all the time, right? But I understand that people can't just get to the theater all the time. But the more you go to the theater, the more you're broadened to the concepts of community and how we live together. And that only makes us stronger and keeps us open to the experiences of other people, so that, you know, we don't have these situations where we get down to this narrow opinion and we're not accepting of other types of culture.
I agree. And I also think that coming to class also serves that purpose as well. You know, coming and studying, you know, classical ballet or other forms of dance, you know, in a class environment with live music. And I've spoken to so many of our adult students who attend our open enrollment classes who, you know, start their day with this experience, and it really is transformative in terms of how they approach everyday life. And they just, they speak so highly to how much it is a part of them, and even the practice of the art being in the school.
Julie, you mentioned sensory-friendly performances, and that is becoming, we are seeing more and more in the performance world. How have you seen these sensory-friendly performances taking shape and really bringing more audiences in?
I'll tell you, it's a remarkable experience, focused directly on these patrons, and it's a build, because I think that while everyone wants that experience for this part of the community, you know, getting the word out to everybody about how well it's received by those patrons is part of that building process. Every year it's expanded. We would love to do them in many more locations. Part of the problem is simply having the repertory on hand that's correct for the situation. Not every show works well for it. We had a wonderful experience with Nutcracker and also with Midsummer Night's Dream. And those two pieces work very well to cut up and make the correct length and change the production values so that the audience gets the best value for it. But we don't always have that on hand every year, because they have to be rehearsed or it has to be the proper time of year. That being said, I have had nothing but fabulous responses from the sponsors. We've been up there at in Rahway, and I know that the community freeholders are thrilled, and they always come and they bring their children, and they love that exposure. I'm hoping that we can expand that up north in Bergen. We've tried to do it in New York. It's all about the timing and the theater and all of that, and mixing it with our season. But with some concerted effort, I would hope that we could actually make that happen in every locale, or at least every county that we go to. It's really special, because the effort on our part is not that great, other than making sure we have the right repertory available. But the impact it has is really great to the community.
That was Douglas Martin, Artistic Director of American Repertory Ballet. He was joined in my conversation by Executive Director Julie Diana Hench and Princeton Ballet School Director Pamela Levy. More information on American Repertory Ballet, including upcoming performances, can be found at arballet.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like A Tempo are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, now celebrating 35 years on the air, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.